Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 29th of August, Anno Domini 2015, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues, here comes Dave.
You know what's next weekend?
Yes, I do.
What?
Next weekend is our show's anniversary.
And we start how many years now?
We're in this 26th year. We begin our 26th year on the air. We're old.
That's longer than my first marriage.
Longer than all of my marriages.
Not longer than my first marriage.
No.
Which I'm still in.
Yes, to that beautiful lady.
Yep. But yeah, it's we're starting our 26th year. So there are children who are younger than...
Second, we have second-generation listeners.
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember that we were doing one of the outings that we were doing, and this one couple came, and they brought their little kid.
Yeah.
And then it was a number of years later, they all of a sudden show up, and here's this kid walking with them. And they go, yeah, that's our little boy. It used to be in the stroller. And it's like, no, you rented this kid.
Yeah.
It's like, where the heck did the time go? Unbelievable.
Yeah, looking back, it's always fast. Looking forward, God, another 20 years to retirement.
Yeah. Not for me. I am retired.
I can't retire yet because my wife is.
Yeah, right. Oh, that's right. She doesn't listen to this show.
No. He's safe. Unless one of the listeners turned him in.
Yeah, right. All right, I'm going to start with this week's news for the poll. With Microsoft's recent announcement that over 75 million installs are now out in the wild for Windows 10, it's obvious the company's plan is beginning to work. Microsoft has been on a mission with Windows 10 in an effort to get as many users as possible migrated to the new OS and achieve such critical mass that the developer and ecosystem partner community comes running to build apps and products in support for the platform. In addition to significantly expanding the Windows 10 footprint, some have argued that Windows 10 is a massive data collection tool for Microsoft as well, cleverly disguised as an experimental and usage model feedback being transmitted to Redmond to help improve the product. Some users have even gone so far as to claim that Windows 10 keylogs what you type and sends it back to Microsoft servers with your machine ID in tow every 30 minutes. Further still, it has been claimed that torrent users and trackers are being targeted by Microsoft for pirated software as well, and at least one of these sites have banned Windows 10 users altogether as a result. While Microsoft likely won't lose much sleep over torrent users banning their product, there seems to be an overreaction in some areas of the market over the company's privacy policy as it relates to the new flagship OS. By the way, those of you who are not listening carefully, everything I just said before is speculation on the part of some people who really need tinfoil hats. Don't take any of that as gospel. Part of what have some users' hackles up is language like this in the EULA, the End User License Agreement, for the Xbox and Windows phone platform, not Windows 10 itself.
Sometimes you need software updates to keep using the services. We may automatically check your version of the software and download software updates or configuration changes, including those that prevent you from accessing the services, playing counterfeit games, or using unauthorized hardware peripheral devices.
Though again, this does not apply to Windows 10 desktop and notebook installations, some folks are not that comfortable with the language in general. Microsoft's position is very similar to the position Apple has taken over the years with respect to its operating system and app marketplace. The intent is to ensure a stable, high-quality experience with their product as well as safeguard the security of their software and user base. If you're uncomfortable with Windows, with Microsoft's data gathering in Windows 10, there are a number of steps you can take to lock down what is sent to your machine from your machine back to Microsoft. If you already have upgraded machines and didn't pay attention to the privacy options during installation, then you missed an opportunity to turn on key privacy settings and turn off key data sharing. If you're not, however, just hit the Start menu, then go to Settings, click on the Privacy Control Panel icon. From here, you can shut down any number of data sharing options to limit what you send back to Microsoft. Be aware, however, that that may then limit the functionality of some things like particularly Cortana. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that would be bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Windows 10 privacy settings are mostly off by default. Your choices are, don't worry, I turned them all on. I turned on some of them. I don't care who spies on me. And when what now? And, of course, when what now is winning. I've got to stop making that a poll choice. 24 of you voted so far. Now, I know you will have much more to say about this. So if you go to the polls, scroll down. No, right at the top on the you have to scroll down on the right to get to fascinating stuff. The first choice is the forums. The second forum is the poll discussion. And one of the topics in there is 29 August 15. Windows 10's privacy settings are mostly off by default. And in there, I've also reminded you how to get to the privacy settings. So you don't have to call and ask. You can just go right to the site and look them up there. And I know you'll have more to say about this because I know you will. So you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
And probably that whole clause in there is because of Cortana. That it has to take your speech and break it down and figure out what you meant, and sometimes
hopefully correctly.
But sometimes it can't do that locally. It has to do it over. It sends it back to a server farm, and then whatever you asked for, that query eventually goes to the server farm to get answered and comes back to you. So
right.
It technologically, it's obvious that anything you ask Cortana is going to be sent to the internet.
Right, and in addition to that. Cortana, Siri, Google Now all have Amazon Echo all have to know stuff in order to do stuff. So, for example, on Google Now, I can say start Pandora. Well, it has to know that I have Pandora on my phone in order to start it. So, if you don't let it know what's on your phone, it can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
I can say send a text to Steve. And if I have not allowed it to access my texts, then it can't do that. So these are all features that you certainly can turn off, but you need to be aware that you will be curtailing the functionality of the product if you do that.
Right.
And that's why they're all turned on at the beginning, because Microsoft, Apple, and Google all want their products to be as useful as possible so people will keep using them. I can't tell you the last time I typed. Yes, I can. I just did it earlier because people were in the room. But when I'm alone, I don't even type texts anymore. I speak them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's easier and faster.
Yeah. And
the recognition is phenomenal.
It really is.
We sit back and think about it. Just think 5 years ago. I'm not talking a long time frame, folks. Just 5 years ago, you had to hand type everything. Now to be able to, you know, just go ahead and speak into your phone, enunciate, and it will sit there and type it perfectly.
I remember when the Kurzweil and the Dragon Dictate were 80% accurate, and we were amazed at how great that was.
And then if you got a cold, forget it.
Right. But it was only 80% accurate. Mm-hmm. It got 20 wrong.
Yeah.
But we were amazed at how great that was.
Oh, yeah, that was
now
still
99.9% accuracy porks us off. You know?
How fast we forget.
And makes for fun websites.
Yes. Websites to talk about autocorrect and all of that stuff.
Oops.
Yeah.
Who was it? Oh, there is a comedian. Gabriel Iglesias,
sure,
was talking. Yeah, Fluffy, and he's sitting there saying how he's off one time doing a concert, you know, and he's off, and it was his birthday. So after it, some folks wanted to take him out to drink, And he told his girlfriend, now wife, that he was going to, you know, no, go home right back to the hotel. And so they took him out and they got him really hammered. And he's on this iPhone. They got him and his girlfriend on this iPhone. And he's sitting there and he's doing up this text. And, oh, kissy face, kissy face. And all this stuff. And it totally translated it incorrectly, but doing that saved his butt. Instead of saying that he was out drinking, that he missed his girlfriend severely and can't wait to get home.
Nice, nice.
He goes, thank you, Apple.
Yep, yep, yep. I once got a text. A voicemail. You know, you can, one of the things that Google will do is if you use your Google Voice number and someone sends you a voice message, if you don't answer the phone, you know, they can leave a message. And Google will not only save that and record it, but it will also turn it into a text message so you can see what they said.
Oh, cool.
And it was a friend of mine who was asking me something extremely innocuous. But it translated the first part of the sentence as waiting for sex later.
Okay.
And I looked at it and I thought, okay.
Didn't say with him.
No, it didn't. No, I suppose not. Or with me, actually, because it was from him. But it was
awkward.
And this is the problem with all of them, of course, if you mumble or if you've got a cold. He had a severe cold.
Oh, yeah. At the that time. Throws it off big time.
Like this, you know? So if you've got a cold or you cough in the middle or, you know, whatever it is, it can cause some issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jeff Goldblum in The Fly. With Brundle Fly, it stopped recognizing his voice.
Yep.
Well, that was, 30 years ago, that movie?
Yeah.
And we haven't gotten that much better. No. Actually, it is a whole lot better than we
did. Yeah, no, it is. Yeah. It really seriously is. I mean,
so when it makes that one mistake, we're really mad.
Yeah, I remember back in the day, we had a fellow come to the cider meeting and give a demonstration of voice control of your Apple system. And he asked, he wanted to come in early and make sure that it was set up properly and all this stuff. So he came in, he got the whole thing set up. He was doing all this stuff. He would say, computer, and the computer would say, yes, master. And he would say, turn on the lamp. And the computer would say, turn on the lamp, master. And he would say, yes, and it would turn on the lamp. And he did this for like an hour, and it was perfect. It was perfect. It worked perfectly. So he opened the room. 100 people came in and changed the acoustics of the room.
Yep.
And nothing worked for the entire thing. And I couldn't stop laughing because that was so clearly how those things worked back then in a nutshell.
Yeah.
If it wasn't perfect.
And even stuff
circumstances, it didn't work.
Yeah, even stuff like Dragon, and there was Power Secretary for a while. They always recommended a headset.
Yep.
So the microphone is right up by
right
your
there
mouth.
Up in your face, and you had to sit there and kind of play around with that too. Again, because if you got too
right
close,
distance, yep.
You could sit there and pop your peas.
Yep.
And
now I can do it from halfway across the room.
Yeah.
If I were to say the word Google preceded by the word hey, my phone would go off, my computer would go off. Probably if I had a radio on, if you got the radio on, your computer would go off. Because the recognition is so much better now.
On MacBreak Weekly, they started saying the word Shlomo instead of all the trigger words. And then they got an email from someone named a Shlomo.
Stop. Didn't like it?
I didn't like
it,
yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah.
It was probably half in joke, but
seriously.
Yeah.
Seriously.
They're just infinitely better than they were. And, you know, as an old timer, as somebody who went through the Kurzweil stage and the original Dragon Dictate stage and all of that, when I actually use Google now, I'm still amazed by how well it works and how easy it is to use.
Oh, it is. It's unbelievable.
It's kind of astonishing. Google now doesn't have the jokey stuff that Cortana and Siri do, but in terms of the actual use, it's still pretty hot, I gotta say. Pretty amazing stuff. All right, that music tells me we're ready for a quick break. If you're on the line, Please stay on the line. We'll get to you in just a couple of minutes. If you're not on the line, why not? 585-966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, you. Soundbites, member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Linda from Greece on the line. Hi, Linda. What's up?
Great. You freaked me out when I didn't even say my name, and Dave says, Linda. And I thought to myself, that freaked me out.
Linda, there's this thing called technology that they've had for around a while ago. It's called caller ID.
Oh, but before you've always said, who's this? And I say, Linda from Greece. All of a sudden, I don't have to say that anymore?
Well, it's,
sometimes.
It depends on it depends on whether the system is working.
Okay. Question. Too bad you're not on my birthday. My birthday's tomorrow.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, I got a Windows 10 laptop, but I'm a little scared because I don't know Windows 10.
Sure.
What can you tell me about it? Should I like it or shouldn't I like it?
Well, it's much closer to Windows 7 than it was to Windows 8.
Okay.
So if you're familiar with Windows 7, then you're really not going to have any trouble with it. The big differences are mostly under the hood, that is to say, in the background, and how well it works and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to that, does this laptop have a touch screen?
Yes, it does.
Then you might want to learn some of the touch features, like if you swipe from the far right in toward the middle.
Uh-huh.
It brings up a section that has things like settings and things like that on it. So it's easier to get it at the control panel. That's the settings is the control panel.
Yeah.
So those things are a little easier, but you can still get to all the same things in all the same ways you used to without any real problems because everything that used to be there is still there.
Why is it every 2 years they get something right?
Well, yeah.
I mean, we got Windows 7, we got Windows 8, nobody liked it. Now we got Windows 10, seems like every 2 years they get it right. Why can't they do this every year?
Well, the thing is, what they tried to do with Windows 8 is to make the entire experience across all their devices look identical, and the device they picked for everything else to look like was the phone, which was smart in the sense that the phone is the hardest one to do, so let's just make everything else look like the phone, but was kind of the stupidest one to do because nobody has the phone.
I know.
So they really just picked wrong. That's all.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, so
it was a strange case of Microsoft looking too far ahead. Eventually, everyone will have touchscreen devices and voice control. And
yeah, but who's still going to want to be
a long time away?
They thought they could force it, and they can't.
No, they can't. I mean, especially throwing it on a corporate desktop and telling folks, oh, yeah, you can just reach over and swipe on the screen and all that. And oh, we got to also retrain you on how to do Windows completely. I don't think so.
In a lot of corporate environments, the screen is huge, but also far back enough that you can't reach it to swipe.
Yeah, because the people want their desktops, some of them even have it mounted
on
a wall.
That's exactly right. So certainly for laptops it works, assuming you're not hooking an external monitor to your laptop.
No.
Right, so I would say give it a try. Don't be afraid of it. It's very much like Windows 7, and the things that are different, you can either ignore or learn as time goes on.
Okay, now, what is Cortana?
Cortana is like Siri or Google Now.
Oh.
So you can say, I forget how you start
Don't anthropomorphize computers. They hate that.
They hate that. Right. You can, like you can say, hey, Siri, or the Google one. You can say the same about Cortana, and then ask questions like, you know, how far away is the moon, or what time is my next appointment, or, you know, all of that stuff.
So instead of typing a question into the web browser, you can ask...
Well, you can also, down in the lower right there, you see that little bar. That's the Cortana bar, mm-hmm. and you can type stuff in there as well, but you don't have to. You can just speak your... assuming, and you've got a laptop, so I'm sure it has a microphone. So you can just speak your, you use the trigger phrase, which I'm pretty sure is hey followed by the word Cortana, I think.
Okay.
Is that how it starts? Did they say?
Haven't seen yet.
I forget what the trigger is, but once you've started that, then just like with Siri, you can ask it questions. Who is the 14th president? How far away is the moon? When is my next appointment? Is it going to rain tomorrow? Things like that.
Okay. Now, you said on your phone, I got the same phone you have. Yeah. You said on your phone you never do any typing. I can't figure out how to do it. I mean, I'm doing a lot of typing. You say you never do it. Well, how did you set it up so you don't have to do that?
Well, when I am going, well, you start out with the Google Now.
Uh-huh.
And you can say to Google Now once you use the trigger phrase, which I'm not going to do over the... I've had many people berate me for using the trigger phrases for Siri and for Cortana and for Google Now. Because
you say hello, you know, hi,
yeah,
Google
right,
Now.
Right, right,
yeah,
right.
Okay,
and,
go ahead.
And then what you do is you say, how does it go? Send a text to and name somebody.
Uh-huh.
And then it will bring it up and say, what do you want to type? And you just speak it. Now, if you want, you have to dictate like it was 1940 and you're talking to your secretary. So you have to say things like, hi, Linda, exclamation point. How are you today, question mark? Hope everything is going well, period.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah. So you can do that and then you can send it. Or... if you're in the middle of an exchange, so for example, when I'm sitting at home and my daughter texts me, which doesn't happen often enough, I can hit reply and then or hit the little place where you would normally type. And when the keyboard comes up in the lower right, there's a microphone. If I hit that, then I can speak my reply.
Oh.
So those are just two instances. And again, in the car, you certainly don't ever want to be bringing up playing with your phone while you're driving.
Yeah.
So you can do it there as well.
But it was so funny. Now I have a 2010 car, and my girlfriend just, you know, she's playing around with her phone, and she says, "Do you know you can answer your phone on your car?" Mm-hmm. And I went, "What?" It's been 5 years, and I just learned it this summer that if I put it in the holder I've got, it's Bluetooth, there's a button on my car, and I could just, and I never knew I had that.
Yeah, and for the people who don't have that, you can buy a $30 Bluetooth device that does the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So you think
I'm gonna like Windows 10?
I think you are. It's very similar to 7, and like I said, the few things that are different... you learn them over a couple of weeks and you're done.
Okay. Oh, I went back to, remember I was a couple of weeks ago or maybe a month ago, I went back to the N router. Remember I was telling you I was having
fun? Right.
I love it. I got Netgear, and what I love about it, it gave me a password.
Nice.
Yeah, on the box it had the password. And I went, that's the first router I've ever seen that gave me a password.
Well, that's extremely dangerous, though. Does every box have a different password on it, or now does anyone in the world know your password?
Yeah, really.
No. The password was inside the box.
Oh, all right. It was on a piece of paper inside the box. You should probably change that password.
I'd still change it.
Well, I mean, it is something nobody will ever think of. I mean, you know,
but I'm not
going to tell you what it is.
It's no, of course not.
Yeah. It's on a list from Netgear somewhere.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So someone will find that and publish it.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you what mine is. I'm just going to make one up, like Sunny Day 749.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, something that somebody that you know, I would never think of this.
All right. Well, okay. Yep. I would still personally suggest you change it, but that's okay, one way or the other.
Okay. Thank Thank you, guys.
All right. Thanks, Linda.
It's like some of the routers that support that wireless protected setup. It may be wireless, but it is definitely not protected. And every pin, almost every pin is written on the bottom of the router.
Yep.
It was interesting. Steve Gibson on Security Now did a teardown of it. It's supposed to be 8 characters, right?
Yeah.
But they broke it down into 2 sets of 4. So it's really only a 4-digit pin they have to guess. And there's only 10,000 combinations.
Right.
And then there's a second 4-digit pin, but the 8th bit is a checksum, so there's really only 3 digits. So that's only 1,000 guesses.
Right.
So you can break WPS in, an hour, maybe.
Yeah.
With your pocket watch.
Yeah.
So
WPA
if you have
2 is certainly better, but WPA not so much.
Well, no, this isn't the encryption. This is the wireless protected setup.
Oh, right.
You push a button on your router and on your computer, and they talk to each
WPS.
Other.
WPS. Yeah,
WPS.
Yeah,
yeah. They talk to each other and say, "Okay, I've got the passwords. You're all set up and ready to go." If you have WPS on your router, turn it off immediately.
It's so convenient because many of them just have a button.
Yeah. But that means the because it can be broken so easily, someone sitting out in the parking lot or on the road can break into your router too.
Yep, I suggest to everybody that you regularly look at the logs from your router to see who's connecting to your router, and the only place you'll find them is on the router. But I suggest people do that regularly because otherwise you don't know who's broken into your system.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Roger from Irondequoit, New York. Hiya, Roger. What's up?
Well, Nick, been living almost 2 weeks with Windows 10.
Yeah.
I got to agree with you. It is a great system. It is a stable system. It's buggy, but then again, so was XP when it was brand new.
Right.
But a couple of real rants I've got about it, and the number one was that they have something new on there called Groove Music.
Yeah.
And they want to make that the default for virtually every media.
Yep.
Now, last week, I missed a good portion of the show. I don't even have a radio in my office anymore because every time I would hit listen via high speed, it would bring up Groove Music, and Groove Music would give me a message saying, try a different playlist. This item is missing in, or we can't get it. So I went to my settings, tried to go back to Windows Media Player that I've always used to listen to the show.
Yeah.
It wasn't even listed. So I said, okay, enough of this. I'm going to download VLC Media Player and see if I can get that on my list of defaults. As soon as I downloaded VLC Media Player, when I went back to my defaults, magically, Microsoft now gave me the option of Windows Media Player.
The last media player you install always tends to become the default. So so there's one thing you need to play from the internet and it's got the real player. You go, oh crap, I got to install the real player. Now, real player was the last player you installed and it becomes the default.
Right.
Right. Well, no, VLC didn't become the default, but what happened?
The better programs ask.
Yeah.
You would go to settings.
You never saw Windows Media Player and now you do.
Right.
Yep.
And I was able to set it. And again, this week, I had to change the default for the .m3u to Windows Media Player from Groove Music.
Microsoft wants you to use what Microsoft wants you to use, and the heck with what you want to use.
Yeah, I had to do the same thing with images.
Yep.
I had to change my default there from the junk that they built in as default on Windows 10.
Yep.
To go back to Windows Photo Viewer.
Microsoft really wants to be Apple. Apple gives you very, very few choices. I mean, you can download more, you can add more, you can do all that. Apple gives you very, very few choices. However, unlike Microsoft, where people get angry about the choices, every time you get a choice from Apple, a real Apple fan has just a tiny little orgasm. So it's a very different, I'm sorry, did I say that on the air? It's a very different worldview between an Apple fan and a Microsoft user,
Well, they buried Internet Explorer.
Yeah, that's a good thing. I completely agree with that.
Well, that's hidden.
Yeah.
If you go down to your search on your start menu and put in Internet Explorer, you can bring it up. You can get the location, and then you can put it on the desktop. Not that I'm a big fan of it, but I do websites, and when you're doing a website, you have to be able to test in all the most popular browsers.
And there are still some government websites that refuse to work if you're not using Internet Explorer.
Right. And so you've got to look for that and find that. It can be a pain and things like that.
Yep.
The other question I've got is, how come no one is carrying microphones?
What do you mean?
I have Cortana, all right, on Windows 10. I just went to look for desktop microphones, and none of the big box stores stock them.
Really?
They did when I bought one.
Yeah, I just bought one a while ago.
I was online last night with Staples, Best Buy, Office Max.
Sometimes you have to look in the gaming section.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want a headset microphone. I want something that just sits on the desk that I can talk to.
Blue microphones are very, very good.
Yep. I just went to Amazon and found the Logitech USB desktop microphone.
The other thing you might want to check out is God Mode. I don't know if you've seen it yet or not.
God Mode?
God Mode for Windows 10. If you're looking to change your setting.
No, look, hang on. We got to take a break right now. Stay on the line. You can tell us about God Mode when we come back. Going to take a quick break, just a couple of minutes. Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we have Roger on the line telling us about God Mode.
Okay, one quick note before we get to God Mode in Windows 10. We're talking about IE and Edge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Edge, Microsoft has finally accomplished one thing. Unlike the mistake they made with Millennium Edition, they finally figured out crap is a four-letter word, but it's not spelled Edge.
Yeah.
It's slower and more awkward than IE ever was.
Yeah.
I had to re-download a website, import it from the web after doing a clean install for Windows 10.
Yeah.
And it scrambled the whole thing.
Wow.
Even tech support couldn't straighten it out. I just had to redo it.
Wow.
So Edge is junk. But God Mode is kind of neat. It basically takes, you know how your settings are split in Windows 10 between settings or control panel.
Right.
It takes everything that is in settings, everything that is control panel, and puts it on one great big long list. And if you're using classic shell start menu instead of the Windows start menu, when you roll your cursor over it, it throws out a side menu that you can scroll down in alphabetical order of everything.
Yep, it's very cool. Steve has put up a link on the Soundbites website as to how to activate it. But people,
it's very easy. You just copy and paste God Mode with the folder number.
Right.
God Mode into a folder, and boom, it comes up.
Right. But people, I want you to pay attention to what I'm about to say. God Mode is just that. It is very powerful, and you can royally screw up your system if you do something wrong. So unless you know what you're doing, or you don't mind turning your entire computer into a brick, don't play with God Mode.
Yeah.
There you go. All right, thanks, Roger.
Okay, Nick, thanks a lot.
We appreciate it. Thanks. That's one of the problems with telling people about features like this. They will want to go play around with it, and then somehow it's our fault when they screw it up.
Yeah.
Do not play with God Mode. Just don't do it. You don't want to. You shouldn't. Stay away from it. Only if you really know what you're doing should you have anything to do with God Mode at all. Be very careful about doing something like that. And Roger, I just wanted to remind you that, like I said, at Amazon, I found the Logitech USB desktop microphone. There seems to be... You don't want the $105 one, but they have some for like
$20.
$20, which is probably closer to what you want.
And that's the one they probably have in the store.
$105? What does it do? Your shopping? All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dennis. What's up?
Hi, guys. I've got a box that's going to be my secondary machine, so I don't feel bad about trying to put Windows 10 on it. What I want to know is it's a single core processor, 1.3 gigahertz, 4 gigs of memory. Is that going to run Windows 10 okay or not?
What's the megahertz?
Say again?
What's the speed on the processor?
1.3 gigahertz.
Okay. Single. And you've got 4 gigs of RAM?
Yes.
Yes, it will run it.
But
it's not
going to
be your fastest machine.
Yeah.
But for testing, for playing, as long as you fully understand that some of the slowness is, in fact, due to the machine you're running, you should be fine.
Yeah, because of the fact that it's going to be a secondary machine. That's the only reason I'm putting Windows 10 on it now. I wouldn't even dare put it on my primary box. Now, the second question I have related to that is I wanted to wipe the drive completely and have no operating system on it, but then that means I can't download Windows 10 to it, or what?
Well, you can download Windows 10 and then just burn it to a CD, or DVD, rather.
Yeah, you can burn Windows 10 to DVD. Before you do that, go into your secondary box and bring up the computer icon, or rather in the start menu where it says computer, right-click on that, select properties, and go find your serial number and write that down.
Serial number of the box?
Of Windows. The activation number,
okay.
The serial number.
All right.
Because it will require that when you install it, and if you don't have it, then you cannot install it. Microsoft will expect you to buy one.
Even if my drive is wiped totally clean and there's no operating system on it?
It will, and there in particular. If you're upgrading a system, then it'll just grab the serial number from the current version of Windows.
What it'll do is it'll go out and verify that that is a legitimate number and come back and say, okay, yep, you're good to go.
I bet the disk image you're downloading is upgrade only and not new install. I wonder. I'm looking on Microsoft's website.
I don't think
website.
It is.
I think install? Yeah.
I think I've talked to people who've done a clean install with it.
But then you've got to put in a Windows 10 product key.
No, you have to put in a Windows product key.
So that's why, yeah.
That's
7 or 8.1, yeah.
Right.
Most of them are on either the side of the machine or on laptops on the bottom of it.
On the bottom where they get rubbed off and you can't read them.
Well, right. They've gotten smarter and putting it in where the battery is stored. Yeah.
Now, the problem may be that Windows product key in system, it is the product key, not the license key. I run into that a lot.
I don't know.
And
you've
so
got to have the license key.
License key.
All right, license key.
Also, Dennis, there was something else I was going to say about the license key that was also very important. Now, my assumption is that this is indeed a legitimate copy of Windows 7 or 8.1. For those of you listening, however, if you are under the impression it may not be a fully legitimate number, like you bought an OEM copy off the internet, you may well run into the fact that Microsoft will reject that number.
Okay, yeah, that's not going to be my problem.
Right.
I need to know how to format that drive, wipe it without taking it out of the box. How should I do that?
There is a program called Derek's Bootenuke, DBAN, dban.org, you download, you burn to a flash drive or CD, and then you boot that drive in order to erase the internal drive.
Okay. Now, you guys are talking about burning stuff to a drive and burning Windows 10 to a CD or DVD or whatever, so I can put it on this blank hard drive. I tried that with Ubuntu once, and the machine wouldn't boot from the DVD. So am I missing something here?
Well, probably. You can't. Most people don't actually burn properly.
Or
what you download? Well, hold on a second. Yeah. What you download is an ISO.
Okay.
And then you can't just copy that to the disk like it was a file.
Okay.
What you have to use is a program that will take that ISO and turn it into a bootable CD and burn it to the disk.
And where will I find that?
There are, almost every program that you have that will copy files to a DVD will do that. You just have to pick the right option. So copy files is wrong.
Right.
Make a bootable CD or DVD is the correct choice.
Okay.
And then the other feature that might not have worked for you that maybe you were missing is on boot up, normally your machine is set to default to boot to the hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
Normally in boot up, if you hit a lot of machines are now doing F12. If you hit F12, it presents you with a menu.
Or F8 or F2, yeah, depending on yours.
Well, F8, yeah. But it'll say, do you want to boot off the USB? Do you want to boot off the DVD player? Or it'll give you options. So that's where you would, if you put this DVD in or USB, depending on what you use, you can then select boot off that particular device.
Okay. It looks like the Windows 10 ISO has a USB or DVD burning program built in.
Oh.
So you download the ISO on your current Windows, mount it, and then run setup, stick in your USB drive, and it makes a bootable installer for you.
Okay, so what I'm going to do is take my primary box, which is I'm not going to change. I'm going to download the ISO with the bootable that does a self sort of thing, as you were just saying, I think, mm-hmm, and get that on a DVD, and then I can put it on my secondary box, which has the drive wiped, and make sure it's booting from the DVD, or, you know, I know what you're talking about, because I go into the BIOS and I make that the first place.
Right, you do it that way as well. Now, the other thing to remember, just make sure we get all our ducks in a row here, make sure that your primary machine indeed has a DVD burner,
mm-hmm,
and that your secondary machine has a DVD reader.
It will be much faster to USB to use a USB flash drive.
Right, I was about to say, if it doesn't have those, or if you want to do it fast.
How many gigs would I need for
8.
I get my one,
which is pretty small these days for USB drives.
Yeah, my flash drive is exactly 8 gigabytes. Is that going to be a problem?
It will erase everything on it.
Well, yeah, that's okay. But I mean, do you need a little spare change in there?
It actually is like 7.8.
Okay.
So it should fit on an 8 gig drive without any trouble.
Okay, that's great. All right, thanks, guys.
All right, thank you. What we're talking about here, for those of you who are not ready for this yet and haven't paid attention, we're talking about creating an ISO image, a bootable disk for Windows 10. That's not a bad thing to do as a disaster recovery feature as well. Create the bootable disk, write your serial number on it, and make sure, by the way, that you keep that safe, your license key on it. Make sure you keep that safe, because if somebody else uses that license key, your machine will be deactivated. So only one license key is usable at a time.
And unfortunately, that happens all the time when people buy, you know, cheap programs over the internet.
Yeah.
If it's too cheap, there's something wrong. You know, Windows 8 for $20, or Microsoft Office for $30.
Now, that wasn't a problem for Windows XP or 7 or even 8, but it is a problem for 10. Microsoft is now checking
very, very tight.
Every time you boot up, Microsoft checks to see that you have a legitimate number and that you're the only one using it. So be careful.
The other advantage of making a bootable USB flash drive, Mac, Windows, anything, is you can then install it on multiple computers without waiting for that 7 gig file to download again and again and again.
Right. Now, again, you have to have a different license key for each machine.
Right.
But you can use the same installation media, because it will come and ask you for the license key. All right, back to the phones. I think we've got time for Randy from Greece. Welcome, Randy. What's up?
Hi, it's Andy, actually.
Oh, Andy, sorry.
That's okay. I've been called worse. Real quick, a couple years ago, I think, you mentioned that one way you were getting rid of robocallers on your phone answering machine at home was to put on the disconnected phone tones.
Yep.
Does that still work?
It did for me.
Okay.
It does for me.
Okay. Because we recently had 4 mornings in a row between 10 after 7 and 20 after 7 calls from folks in India claiming that they worked for Bill Gates.
Yeah.
And royally ticked my wife off because she doesn't get up that early because she's retired.
Yeah.
And so finally, after a couple years of my telling her, look, if we put this on there, these calls go away, she finally said, put them on the phone. I've had it. So
yeah,
I've got them on the phone. I'm just wondering if it still works.
It worked. It seems to be working for me.
Okay.
And for the rest of you listening, it's that 3-tone you get when you call a number that's not in service. It goes, do, do, do. And then it comes out and says the number you've called is unreachable, whatever it is. And what happens is robocallers listen for that tone. And if they hear it, they take your number off the list, for a while, because their whole job is to make as many calls as possible, and they don't want to waste time calling numbers that are out of service. So after 6 months or so, they'll put it back on again and try it again.
Because it may have been reassigned to somebody else now.
Because it may have been reassigned to somebody else. But in addition, but before that happens, until that happens, you're free of those robocallers.
Right. The way I solved it was by taking the phone out of the bedroom.
Yeah.
we've turned the ringers on the bedrooms upstairs all the way down, but I have elderly parents.
Now do you have it also on the do not call list?
Oh, yeah, but that's a joke.
Yeah,
they don't care.
No, it helps
some. That's just a number that they want to call because they know there's a human there.
Yeah, really. How much, do you need just the tones or do you need part of the recording saying the number's been disconnected kind of thing?
No, all I did, I recorded that. I actually found that on the internet. I couldn't tell
it's
you where right
YouTube.
Now. And then I just honestly, I played it from my phone when I recorded my message.
Right.
You know, I started the message, I played the tone, and then I said, "Hi, you've reached the Francescos, blah, blah, blah."
Yeah, so, well, I got mine on there. It says, "No, we're really not disconnected, but that's for the robocallers to make them go away."
And
I have friends who kind of sit there and start laughing when they're talking and leaving the message. Says, "That's creative. I like that."
Well, and that's the robocalling devices only listen from the tone. They can't tell what being said after that.
Okay, so they just want the tone and then they disconnect. Okay.
Right.
Now, I do have a question. But
you got to hold on now.
I'll stay with you.
Okay, thanks, Andy, because we got to take a quick break. I'm sorry. You've wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense, apparently. And you're going to get another chance to do it again because we've only wasted an hour of your life. There's another one coming. So stay tuned. We'll have Andy from Greece. We'll have Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, you. It's 59 minutes after the hour. It's Sound Bites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And we have Andy from Greece still on the line. Hi, Andy. What's your question?
Okay. 2 weeks ago, maybe three now, you were talking about the Hackers Convention and how they can get into Linux boxes and Windows boxes and Macs, but haven't been able to break a Google Chromebook yet.
Yeah.
Does that mean a Chromebook is more secure than the other three platforms, and should I be looking at doing, like, my online bill paying using a Chromebook rather than my Windows 7 box?
Well, yes and no, and here's why. The Chromebook is inherently much, much, much more secure than the others for any number of reasons. I'm not going to go into the whole litany right here. But from that standpoint, you won't have keyloggers on it. You won't have any kind of spyware on it. That's sort of fair. But once you get off that box and onto the internet, then every machine is the same.
Okay,
so as long as your machine is clean, we're now looking at you've got to use a secure connection to the internet. That's the HTTPS, not just the HTTP. Then you have to worry about how secure your bank is. Sadly, we know none of them are.
Aren't you just a ray of sunshine?
I am. Me and Pollyanna.
We could have a segment called The Breach of the Week, but it would be boring because there'd be so many of them every week.
It'd take up the whole 2 hours.
We only have 2 hours, right, exactly. You know, the definition of Pollyanna, dive into a pile of horse manure hoping to find the pony. Mm. There's this thing called Pwn to Own they do every year. And generally speaking, the Mac falls first, followed by the Windows machine, followed by the Linux machine. Sometimes it takes days to get to the Linux machine. But so far, nobody's cracked the Chromebook.
And what's interesting is the Chrome browser has been cracked. But because on a Chromebook, there's nothing there besides the browser, it's hard to do anything once you've got the browser cracked.
Right. There's nowhere you can get. You can't steal any passwords or any of that stuff. None of that is there. And they still haven't actually cracked the box itself. But basically, a Chromebook, of course, is nothing but a giant browser in a box.
Mm-hmm.
And that not only makes it inherently secure, but a terrible target, because once you're in there, what are you going to do? Go to the internet?
Yeah, you're not going to get anything.
Right. So.
Well, then you're back to the regular phishing scams, like putting up a fake, you're infected with a virus, call us and give us money.
Right, but so far at least, anybody who actually owns a Chromebook is probably savvy enough to know they can't get a virus.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things. I personally love my Chromebook. 99% of what I do is on the internet these days, including manage most of my websites. So I can do almost everything I want to do. It is a little more convenient only because I've built up the tools over 20 years of using Linux to use my desktop, but I can do everything I want to do on a Chromebook. It's real easy, it's real fast, it's real convenient. But if you're one of those people who absolutely must be using a program that was written only for Windows, then that's clearly, or for the Mac, then that's clearly not going to be something you can use.
Because of the inherent security of the Chrome browser, too, that had the highest bounty, $75,000
yep.
for hacking into Chrome. And they did.
Like 75,000 reasons?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
they broke the browser, not the Chromebook.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Interesting. Okay, you'd said that, and I was in the car driving listening, and I was like, I got to call and ask him whether that means that should be the method I use to pay things or whatever.
Well, and the other beautiful thing about Chromebooks is they're pretty inexpensive. So you can buy a Chromebook for under $200.
Yeah, well, I got one for Christmas, and I've been very happy with it because it's small, it's portable. I use out through my in-home wireless network, so I didn't register it separately.
Right.
I don't carry computers with me, so that's not other than my phone. So it's not really a problem. And I find that it's nice because I can be watching TV and kind of going through the email, getting rid of the 90% of the garbage that I don't read or
read right.
while commercials are on.
Yep.
And it seems that I'm having more and more time to go after emails I don't want because there seem to be more and more commercials.
I try never to watch commercial television. If I do, I record it.
Well, I mean,
and that one time you're watching live TV and the fast forward button doesn't work.
Oh man, I can't tell you the number of times that porks me off. What the? Oh yeah.
Sometimes I'll hit pause and like go do something for 10 minutes to let the buffer build up.
Yeah, same thing here. I mean, I DVR everything, and I know I can watch a regular show in 45 minutes. So
yep.
it's just if it's later and I'm a little tired, all of a sudden it's like, oh damn, I forgot to hit the fast forward button. And then I have to, catch up to get through the commercials. But
it's really that's
one device that really has changed the way I watch television. So.
Yeah, you, me, and everybody else.
But I do thank you for all of the information, and I'll let you get on to your next call.
Thanks, Andy. Have a great day.
Yeah, at the recent Pwn to Own competition, $550,000 of prize money was paid out. $110,000 to one guy. He broke Chrome and got the $75,000. There was an extra $25,000 rider to get system privileges, and another $10,000 for proving it worked against the stable and beta versions. So one guy pocketed $110,000, and that's why
the platform it was on. It was on Windows, though.
On Windows, yeah. And that's one of the problems that I'm really annoyed at is a lot of the researchers who find these bugs wait for these contests to win money And you know, so who knows how long he knew about this bug? He could have told Google and got. They have their prize money all the time, right. But not these gigantic prizes you see at these big conventions.
Right. Okay, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bodan from Rochester, New York.
Gentlemen, good afternoon.
How
got a question. One quick one, and that is in regards to Time Warner Cable's Roadrunner. I do have a email account with them, and then lately I was getting issues where I could not either receive. I could not receive the email, so I went in and I had to change one of the settings for the address for the incoming mail. Anybody else have this kind of issue that you heard of? Because I'm surprised that my Outlook program had me change the one of the settings, and I had no notification from Roadrunner.
We have had several people run into this issue, and what I am guessing, this is purely a guess, they are debranding Roadrunner. The license agreement with Warner Brothers apparently ran out, and so now when you look on their website, there's almost no Roadrunner brand. It's Time Warner Internet. And so using mail.twc.com as both incoming and outgoing usually works. And that supports IMAP, where the old pop server.rochester.r.com doesn't support IMAP. So you can't synchronize the mail among your devices.
Uh-huh. Well, actually, I do. You mentioned that I went to the website, and it did say to use both the incoming and the outgoing as the same. But I tell you something, when I did that, I was having issues. And currently, for the servers, I do show my incoming at pop-server.rochester.rr.com, but the outgoing is mail.twc.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a couple of tests, and it does work. I can send, I can reply and stuff like that. But I was just wondering, I was curious to see what happened, and I don't remember ever receiving an email from them informing me to change my settings in the servers and stuff like that.
No, I'm sure you didn't.
Well, I don't know. I also had to change the outgoing, the port number from whatever it was to a higher one. So right.
Probably 587.
Yeah.
And that's because some ISPs block mail ports. Frontier is sort of notorious for blocking port 25. They don't want you to run a mail server. So you run it up at 587. It's so silly. You put it to 587 and it works fine.
Right. Yeah.
If they really wanted to block it, why, they could.
Hey, guys, I have one more question. Actually, this is more towards Steve in regards to my employer recently purchased a bunch of brand new Apple computers, including the video editing program called Final Cut Pro. The question is, after we've been using that program for, a number of hours, it seems to slow down. I mean, I know how to, on a PC, to clear up the cache, to clear out the maybe temporary internet files or something like that. What advice, Steve, can you tell me to clean out the cache on an Apple machine or temp files or anything like that?
That's all handled automatically during the night by a cron job running terminal scripts. First question is, how much memory does the computer have?
Can't answer that question. Don't know.
Yeah. That's oftentimes what it is that you're filling up your memory. Quitting the program and relaunching will clear that out.
Basically close down Final Cut Pro and reopen it again?
Yeah, that can help, or reboot the whole computer, too.
Okay.
There are a couple of programs. I'm trying to remember the one that I like most, because I don't use it much anymore.
But I don't have the authority as an administrator to download any new programs and install them on that, so that's going to be an issue.
So you'll have to run the script from the terminal. Let me find the terminal command. Can you get to the terminal? They might not let you get to the terminal, either.
I'm not sure. I thought it'd be something simple like, there's a setting someplace in the Apple computer where you can delete the cache or, like, for example, run the cleanup on a PC.
Yeah. Yeah, there is. There's a command. It's sudo periodic, daily, weekly, monthly. There's a script that runs every day that cleans the computer, a different one that runs every week and a different one that runs every month.
But if you're going to run sudo, then you need to have the password.
You need to have your so it has to be an administrator that runs these runs the maintenance program.
So if they set it up for once a week, and then on Thursday and Friday, we got a lot of stuff done on the computer, and it's not clearing it out.
Right.
Well, there's a daily one that runs every day.
Okay.
And a weekly one and a monthly one.
So what question should I ask my computer administrator?
I can post this article. There are programs you can install that will do it for you. The ones they have listed are fairly old.
If you know which cache it is, and it should just be the one big one, You can ask your administrator to create a cron job to clean that cache.
There already is.
Well, I'm saying to create a cron job that you can run or that runs every hour.
To spawn.
Well, say once a day at least at a non-critical time.
What I just thought of is there's a safe boot similar to Windows where you boot with the shift key held down, and that clears your caches. It clears your system caches, your font caches, clears everything off. Doesn't load any extra kernel extensions, so it's a very clean boot for diagnostic purposes.
I can reboot or I can restart the computer. Yeah. So while I'm doing that, we'll just hold down the shift key.
Hold down the shift key. And then when you get to the login window, just restart, and it will do a full boot. But everything has been cleared in the meantime.
All right, I can try that to see if that gives me a little extra oomph later in the day or later in the week.
And adding RAM never hurts either, especially for Final Cut.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's something the bosses have to figure out.
Yep. Right.
All right, gentlemen, thank you for your advice.
All right, thanks. Good luck. So, there's
Onyx.
Onyx.
That's the program I've been trying to think of.
There you go.
But it's still a program you have to download and install, and it needs administrator privileges.
Right. And your administrator, I suppose, could install it and give you rights to run it.
Yeah.
You know, that would do it as well. ONYX. Steve will put up a link to that.
It's from France.
It's from France. Which just reminds me of the new State Farm commercials with the Coneheads.
Coneheads. Yeah. Hey, we're in space.
Pretty fun stuff. No. Look, France. It's kind of fun. They're bringing those things back. That's the generation that's buying insurance these days. So that makes a great deal of sense. Bringing back all that old stuff. I wonder what the next generations will be. Maybe the Pickles kids will be adults and the Rugrats children will be
adults.
Well,
they're already doing a Full House recasting. All the original cast is back, and they're remaking.
No, not all the cast.
Oh, who's missing?
The Olsen twins.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I hadn't read that.
Yeah, the Olsen twins, last I heard, were not coming back. Everybody else is, not the Olsen twins.
Well, they grew up and didn't get cute, and they had to bring in that new baby, right?
Yeah, exactly. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. So give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Oh, I keep forgetting that's in there.
That's got the hiccup.
Also, that's about the most dancing I do all week. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Walter from Greece, New York, on the line. Welcome, Walter. What's up?
Greetings to all of you. Question, it's maybe a silly question. I have an older cell phone, flip phone style, and it gets stuck on the boot up. It goes along so far, flashes, and then starts all over again. Now, I'm considering to recycle a phone, but I just want to know, is the information that I have on that cell phone secure right now, or should I consider something like starting it up and dropping it into a bucket of water to kill it, or expose it to a Van de Graaff generator, or put a nail through the battery compartment?
I'm all for driving over it.
Well, you know, will somebody like Best Buy still take it, though, if it's in a mangled condition?
That I don't know. I do know that if, in fact, you're hoping, it depends on what information you've kept on it, of course. Flip phones, you couldn't put much on, but I'm sure there are phone numbers of
Phone numbers, some text stuff, you know, that stuff that's there, you know. But yeah,
if you're worried about that, I would not turn it in. Sadly, I hate to say this.
Yeah.
I would destroy it and then recycle it for parts.
What carrier is it?
It was a pay-as-you-go Page Plus.
If it has a SIM card,
No, there is no SIM card.
Okay. I can say most of your data would be on that SIM card you could just take out.
Yeah, it's a Verizon phone. It's based on Verizon.
Yeah, Verizon
there's no
use
SIM
card.
Cards,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, my suggestion is break the phone severely.
Okay.
And then just turn it in for parts. There's lots of places. At least there are a couple of places you can turn in.
Yeah, they turn them in for 911 phone calls to give them to...
No, I'm saying after you break it. Then now it's just parts.
Yeah.
Recycling, regional computer recycling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I know Best Buy does take stuff because I've taken TVs and other... Anything that has circuit board into it, they'll take it for free. You know, the TVs, of course, is subject to the size... Of the tube or screen, okay. So I'll give them a call, see if they will take a broken up one.
Yeah, good for you.
Okay,
that's a good thing
you.
To do. It's also a good deal for Best Buy because they make money off it. You know, you hand it in for free and they make money off of recycling the gold and stuff out of it. But good for them. You know, I'd rather see it all recycled than sitting in a landfill somewhere. And that's something that we all should remember. You know, we all use these cell phones and we don't think much about it, but you know what? Every single day, you've got all the most important and private information on there. You know, nobody locks their cell phones anymore. You know, so you have to put in a code before you open your phone. And I tell people all the time, if you don't lock your phone, forget my number. I don't want everybody on earth having my number. So if you don't lock your phone, don't put my number in your phone. All right, back to the phones. It's clearly phone minute here at Soundbites. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. Hi, Steve. What's up?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. Quick question and then maybe another question. many, many years ago, I stole someone's code off the Internet, modified it for my own use. I now keep it on my hard drive as my homepage for all my browsers.
Okay.
It's got shortcuts to all the places I go. It's functional, not pretty. Is there any way I can get my Android tablet to use that homepage?
Put it over on the Android tablet.
But how do you do? Okay, I have no idea how to do that.
All right, here's the easiest way to do any of this stuff. You go out and you find a program called AirDroid.
Okay.
AirDroid, and put it on your phone.
Yep.
When you run it, it turns itself into a mini web browser.
Okay.
And tells you its address. You then put that address in your other web browser, in the one on your desktop, and it actually opens up your whole... device, whether it's a tablet or a phone. And so from there, you can copy data back and forth. You can send text messages if it's a phone. You can copy pictures in and out. You can do any of that stuff. And so once it's over on your phone, then you bring it wherever you put it, you bring it up on your browser. And one of the things you can do from there is add it to home screen, and then it just becomes a file on your home screen, and then you just tap it to open it up with the browser.
Okay, I'm not sure I followed all of that. One caveat that might the screen I will also send me to another shortcut screen. Like I've got one HTML file that's got 42 news sites on it.
Sure.
And the home screen takes me to as a quick shortcut to that other HTML file.
Put them both over.
Okay, so this is...
As long as you didn't hardwire the link. So, for example, if the link is /users/Steve/something/something,
mm-hmm.
That's a hardwired link.
Right.
If the link is just the name of the file... And you put that file in the same place you put the main file, then it should find it just fine.
Okay.
Or if it's the straight HTTP lookup, then... Now, but going to a subfile,
no. It's going to a subfile on his own machine. It has to be in the same directory. So you would say, you know, href equals 2.html or whatever the thing is, but not, you know, C:\users\something\2.html.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I'm going to replay this one later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can he email the file to himself on the AirDroid
he could.
And
that
get it
takes
to the file
longer,
system?
It takes longer and it works.
Yeah.
AirDroid is an amazing product, and I recommend it to everybody. It makes it so easy to move files back and forth, to move music back and forth. I move my ringtones back and forth that way.
It's Mac, Windows, web, and Android.
Yeah.
So you can have a Windows PC and move it to your Android.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you run the product on Android or Mac OS, and then using a web browser on any other system. I use it on Linux. You can use it on Windows. You can use it on a Mac. Well, why would you have an Android phone if you had a Mac? But still, and then you just are going to it with a web browser. So it'll come up and it'll say, oh, it's 192.168.1.159 :8888, and you just type in 192.168.1.159:8888 into your web browser, hit enter, and bang, it's up and it's running.
Then save it as a bookmark.
And then, well, you move the file over to the machine.
Okay.
Over to the phone.
Right. Well, all right. I know,
AirDroid part.
Yeah.
Then on the phone itself, you bring it up. And one of the things you can do is save it as a bookmark. But another thing you can do is save it add it to the home screen.
Which I would like to do. Okay.
And then obviously you can do that as long as you make a space for it. Make sure you get space for it.
Now you keep saying phone. I'm presuming Android tablet is the
same. Tablet is the same exact thing.
Okay. One more quick question. One of the things I do when I can't read the text on a monitor, it's either gray on a white background, I can't read it, or something like that, is I highlight it so I've got white text on a blue background.
Yeah.
Very easy to read. But I'm running more and more into, when I do that, it's white text on a gray background.
Yeah.
What is going on with that?
People are just idiots. The people out on the internet are just idiots. I hate to say it, but it's true. In many cases, they're doing... Sometimes what they've done is created a page with a background image, and so they make the text white so it shows up, and then at some point they either lose or remove the background image, and now you've got white text on a gray background. Or the background image is coming from another site, and you've blocked third-party cross-site scripting, which is a smart thing to do.
Which I've done, yes.
Yeah, so that may be where that issue is for you. One of the things that you can do on most browsers is there's a setting for, and I forget exactly what they call it, for visually impaired people it puts its own style sheet in, which makes sure all the text is black, all the backgrounds are white, whatever. But I can't think of what that's called. What?
I don't know.
I can't think of what that's called. I'll think about it and get back to you at some point on that. But that's, if somebody else knows what I'm talking about, please, for God's sake, call in.
You can set up your browser to not accept to basically, you override their text and make it your default.
Yes.
But boy, does that make that messes up a web page.
Well, yes, it will. But the point is, you can then see it.
Yes.
Better. There's got to be an app in the web store. Oh, that was stupid. I just closed my browser. I'm an idiot.
Well, tell them to stop using gray text on a white background.
I will do that.
All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen. I appreciate your time and your assistance.
Thank you.
Yep.
I can't believe I just closed my browser
and stopped everything that was running.
What a moron. Yes, I just stopped everything that was running. Luckily, I'm not running everything you're running,
yeah.
So that's not an issue, but I have to log back in. Luckily, logging back in takes less than eight seconds on a Chromebook, so I'm already back up and running.
Yep. Now, the other thing he might look at is instead of in the browser settings, look in your computer settings. You may be able to change the colors in usually called the accessibility control panel.
That's the word I was looking for.
Oh, that's too simple a word. I didn't think that was it. So you can also often invert your colors. You can switch to grayscale. Mac has an option here called differentiate without color, and I'm not sure what that means. It doesn't seem to do anything on my computer. but if you invert your colors, things look really, really weird.
Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Brian from Pavilion, New York. Welcome, Brian.
How you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
Oh, beautiful afternoon. Beautiful afternoon. Hey, I'm a member, so I think I can ask these questions. Are we going to see a return of a thicker archive? For
The Stickers archive?
Yeah, your archives, the Soundbites archives.
We're in the process, and it seems to be a fairly long and involved process, and most of it is my fault. We're in the process of moving Soundbites to a new server, and in order to do that, I've pulled most of the archive because moving it will be a lot easier without them in the zip file, and then once it's in the new place, I'll just put them all back. So yes, they're all coming back. Unfortunately, until I move it to the new site, I'm not going to do that.
Okay, that's cool. I was hoping that was that's a better answer. I thought it was going to be a money thing or some such thing, but that's cool.
Moving the sites, anybody would like to donate to the upkeep of the site? There's a button on the site. It's the new place is much, much, much more expensive.
Patreon.
But it does. I could do Patreon. That would be interesting. But the new site does give me unlimited. Unlimited storage, and I will be testing that.
Okay, cool. I do enjoy those archives just for entertainment now, as opposed to like informational.
Right.
But it's pretty cool.
Thanks. Right, I appreciate hearing that. Thank you. And like I said, they will be back up. But please be patient until I can actually move the site. And because it's a friggin' WordPress site, it's not as easy. Although somebody gave me a pointer to a program I haven't really looked at yet, but it's called something. Yeah, what it does is it starts with a D, and I'll find it in a second. What it does is it duplicator for WordPress, and what it does is it takes your entire WordPress site and turns it into a zip file. You then move that and another little file over to your new machine, run the other little file, little PHP file, and it unzips WordPress, recreates your database, does everything for you. I'm going to test that before I actually run it, but it seems to do that. And as you can imagine, that zip file is going to be fairly sizable. And my plan is to do it without the giant Soundbites archive so that it moves and unzips faster and everything else. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ramey, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Carl from Pottstown, PA on the line. Welcome, Carl. What's up?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Peachy, you?
Okay. I have a question.
There used to be a piece of software called AM Deadlink, and what AM Deadlink would do is it would check all your browser's bookmarks and favorites. It would go through them all, determine which ones still work and which ones don't, and it would automatically eliminate those bookmarks and favorites that didn't work. However, they stopped that from functioning for some reason. I brought up their website, and they said it's no longer a good idea to do this automatically. You should do it manually. And I always thought it was a great idea for somebody who has hundreds or maybe 1,000 bookmarks and favorites, how much time it would take to go through each of them by hand. And I was wondering if there's any other program that you can buy that'll do this automatically for you.
What is your web browser?
Internet Explorer. I also use Firefox and Chrome.
Chrome has one called Check My Links.
Mm-hmm.
AM Deadlink is still being listed.
Yeah, and if you're you go there and read the page, it says bookmark managers are too complex now. Don't use us on modern browsers.
Right, right. There's one called Link Checker. Another one called Sort Site.
I found what a lot of these do is check for dead links on a web page. That seems to be a very popular function, but I'm not looking to check dead links on a web page. I'm looking for a function that'll check bookmarks and favorites in web browsers, and that seems to be hard to come by.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
I found one for Firefox called Bookmarks Checker. So, Google Find Dead Links in Bookmarks. It still keeps finding AM Deadlink Checker, but it finds some other ones as well.
Right. So, you're looking for... I just did a Google search on check browser dead bookmarks, and I'm still waiting for it to come back because it just wants me to be angry. Bookmarks Checker for Firefox... again, these things will probably check and give you a list, but not actually delete them automatically, which makes sense. You know?
Okay. Yeah.
So there's one for, there's one called Bookmarks Checker for Firefox. There's one, shockingly, called Bookmark Checker for Chrome.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a bad idea to cull your bookmarks every once in a while.
Don't see anything for IE, though.
Yeah, I don't see anything for IE. IE doesn't have those kind of add-ons. There's one called... There's one from... Yeah, AM Links. Now, I wonder if you can still run AM Links and tell it check but don't delete. That would be safe. That would be safe.
Right.
And just list them. The bookmark page is just it's either a web page itself, an HTML file itself, or it's an XML file. So, depending on which version of whatever you're running. So, it shouldn't be difficult to actually write a program that would do those checks.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't necessarily know of one. But you can do check browser dead bookmarks Internet Explorer.
Of course, the drastic solution is to delete them all and start over.
Gizmo has free best free bookmark cleaner.
They do AM cleaner.
Check Internet. Oh, here's one from GHacks called Check Internet Explorer Favorites. So again, it'll list them and let you do what you want with them. Faves Analyze. Oh, see. This is another one. Apparently, when Microsoft changed the format for their browsers, it broke everybody. So you can do it for Chrome, and you can do it for Firefox. Apparently, Google is, or rather, Internet Explorer is another kettle of fish. There was one called Faves Analyzer that did the same thing, but it says right here, it's not available anymore. and it says same thing for AM Deadlink. But what you can do with either one of those is run it and just look at the links and then delete them by hand.
Okay, maybe that's the best way to do it then.
Yeah, it's going to take you longer, but particularly with Internet Explorer, it's going to be much safer.
Yeah, the thing I was thinking is if I could find one that would work and that would delete bookmarks and favorites automatically, maybe I could find one for Firefox or Chrome, and then once that's done, I could synchronize all the bookmarks between the three browsers I mentioned, and they'd all be the same.
Well, there you go. That will do it. And in fact, like I said, there is one called Bookmark Checker, and I'm looking at it right now, scanner control. Click to start the check, preferences, blah, blah, blah. So, that's the way to do it.
Okay, well, thanks a lot. I'll give that a try.
Sure. Thanks. I may run this myself, see what it looks like. Hopefully I can run it without actually doing any deleting. Although, like I said, it's just a file, so if I back up the file first,
yep.
You know, that's the safe way to do anything. Back up the file first and then go ahead and try it.
One thing I wish browsers would do is when you add a bookmark to the bookmark menu, they always put it at the bottom of the menu.
Yeah.
Put it at the top of the menu.
Yep.
That would be really, really, really nice.
Yep. All right, back to the phones. In keeping with the long-distance callers, we have Jason from Altoona, PA. It's PA day here at the show. Hiya, Jason. What's up?
I was going to say the control, but then he had already figured that out about just getting the attachment for one browser and doing it and then importing it to all the other browsers.
Yep.
But that might work well if he were to add X marks into the equation and allow that to do the syncing across the browsers for him.
Right. There is a program called X marks that will sync things up to the web and then sync them across all your browsers. If you have to add X marks to all your browsers, but yes, that would work very, very well.
And since X marks is owned by the same company that owns LastPass, it's a good time to upgrade to secure passwords controlled by a decent quality password manager.
Right, exactly.
What I was calling for was I had heard you make the little comment there, and it caught my attention just when you said it about using Patreon for the site support.
Yeah.
And I want to second that wholeheartedly. I use that to support Tom Merritt's Daily Tech News Show, which is a great daily podcast to keep you in the spirit. And I would love it if you guys could get Rob to consider opening up a Patreon account for the station, too.
Oh, yeah. I haven't played a lot with Patreon. I will absolutely look into it.
Yeah, the station uses a system called Click to Pledge, which is separate from Patreon.
Yeah, I'm currently just using PayPal.
Well, the reason I like Patreon and why the local hackerspace that I was a member of here in State College, we had actually looked at it as well, was the nice thing is if, in my case, you know, I could, if you created a Support the Soundbite site Patreon, and the station had a Support the Station Patreon, and Tom's DTNS podcast has his support via Patreon. What happens is rather than me getting billed for whatever I donate to each thing, every month a single charge hits my card for the total amount. And which also makes it nice because rather than with the credit card, you know, you have that flat piece of fee and then the percentage on top of that. That flat percentage gets made up amongst everybody rather than everybody having to pay that full flat fee themselves, too.
Nice.
So, that would allow me to throw a dollar your way, throw a couple of dollars towards the station's way, throw whatever I'm donating to Tom his way, and everybody would be happier.
So that's nice. They send you one bill for all the different things that you're supporting.
Yeah, and there are hundreds.
Somebody was thinking there.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
A good sign.
So it was just something, the way you mentioned it, it kind of sounded like one of those things, it's a good idea, but you know, I'm too busy for it. And I just want to throw a vote there that you should at least take a look at it and see if it isn't something that it shouldn't be truly considered.
No, I appreciate that. I will definitely look into that and see what I can do. I'm looking at their website now. They've got a bunch of cool stuff, but I'll have to read up about what it is and how it works and blah, 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 blah. So that's great. Thank you. I'm pretty excited about this. Heaven knows at this point I could certainly, now that I've retired.
And you have all this free time.
Keeping all these websites paid for is a little harder than it used to be. But
and
I will,
you might even be able to create one for Ask Nick where people could throw a dollar or two every week or every month or whatever they decide. That's the nice thing about Patreon is it's not so nice for you guys, but it is nice for those of us who are trying to support a lot of people rather than being stuck with a $5 pledge to everybody or whatever they decide is the minimum. I can throw what I can afford towards you guys.
Right. And then I have to pay a fee to be part of it? Or they take a piece of the action, or how does that work?
I believe the fees are similar to what you would do through PayPal, but you would have to double-check that yourself.
All right, I will. Thanks. All right, thank you so much. We're done for another week. I want to thank everyone who called in. I want to apologize to all those to whom we did not get. Please call earlier and more often next week. Don't go away, though, because George is about to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow, and we will be back next week with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 55 minutes after the hour, and you've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known and unknown universe. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.